Shalom Mishpocha, Shalom family. Mishpocha is a Hebrew word. It means family, and we're the Mishpocha, the family with the Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people. That middle wall of separation has come down to form the one new man. And there is something better, the release of the supernatural DNA of a Jewish person that believes in Jesus, and the release of the supernatural DNA of a Gentile Christian. And when the two come together, what an explosion. And I've got good news for you. The good news is the spiritual scales are lifting from the eyes of Jewish people. There is another move of God's Spirit on Jewish people. And when these two people groups become one, devil, your time is running out. My guest, David Cordo, I'm speaking to him at his home in Kingston, New York. And David, I mean, I have never heard of someone that has had attempt after attempt after attempt to destroy them, even before you were born. But I understand now why this occurred, because today you walk under such a strong healing anointing that half the people that need healing in an audience where you're ministering are healed, and if the other half will just believe, they'll be healed too. You have a church of which no one has died from sickness in your church. You call that normal, and I believe that that's part of the destiny on your life. But I want to take you back to before you were even born, your mother was pregnant, something strange happened to her. Tell me about that.
Yes, Sid, thank you. My mother was 7 months pregnant, carrying me, and my father was still in the military, and she was staying at her mother's home, and it was not a real good environment. And she was not walking with God, but suddenly in the bedroom one night, a wind blew in the room and a voice told her, literally an audible voice, said, "Get out of the house." And then she ignored it, and a few minutes later it blew in again.
She was not a believer in the Messiah at that time.
No, she was not.
Okay, go ahead.
And it blew in again and it said, "Get out of the house." And she said, "Why?" It said, "Because of the child." And she screamed at the voice, said, "Get away, leave me alone." And it did. But only a short time after that, she was thrown through a windshield of a car in an accident with her brother and broke 7 ribs on one side. And she told God in her own way that, "Lord, let this child be born healthy. I'll raise him to serve you." And they could not set the ribs. As a young child, I saw the huge calcium deposits on them. And I was born healthy. But when I was 7 years old, when I was 7 years old, we were both baptized and filled with the baptism of the Holy Spirit, speaking in tongues. And shortly after that, we went to a tent revival in a neighboring city. We're sitting in the very back of the tent, saw the sisters with the big hairdos going down the sawdust, people testifying, their blinded eyes open. I saw people come out of wheelchairs. And then suddenly my mother let out a scream. And all 7 ribs were set. Nobody even touched her. The gift of faith was in operation.
So in other words, it was just calcified in an unset position. It must have been very painful for her.
She said it was very, very painful, and calcium deposits had formed on the broken ribs. And, I mean, they were just like my knuckles. I know you cannot see on the radio, but they're huge. And all 7 was set, and she is 85 years old, lives next door to the church right now. Today is still serving God.
Well, that must have had quite an impact on you. When I read about your life, you volunteered for the draft. You went to Vietnam. You volunteered at 18, and at 19 you found yourself in Vietnam and you started drinking. I mean, with the impact that occurred in your life, I mean, and that wasn't the first time. What about the time your mom's car got stuck and you were in it at the railroad track and the train is coming?
Yes, I was only like 8 or 9 years old, and we were in a neighboring city next to our city, and we started crossing the railroad tracks with a big, like, hump, And we got right on the track, and the car quit running. And there's train from my side. I was on the passenger side, of course, coming at a high rate of speed. And I remember looking at that train, like, you know, we didn't have time to think about getting out of the car. And suddenly unseen hands pushed the car off the track, and the train went by. And, you know, I realized long after that, God kept me alive again.
Yeah, but I mean, seeing things like seeing your mom's seven ribs healed, seeing a car transported by itself so that you don't have certain death with the train hitting you. How in the world were you just not even thinking about God in Vietnam of all places? How'd that happen?
Okay, what happened is my father at that time was not in church. I baptized him up here in New York at 77 years old. He's in church now. But my mother was in and out of church my whole life growing up. And so I was never really grounded in the Word. We may be in a couple months and out a couple years, in and out. Then when I hit my teen years, for a little while, we served God, and I remember in one city we lived, I'd go to the church each morning during the summer. It was open, and pray for hours and walk out on the street, fully expected as a 14-year-old boy to see the Lord step through the clouds or something. And then we moved back to another city where we lived. Immediately, I began to run with the wrong crowd. We weren't in church again. And so through my teen years, I ran totally wild. After graduating from high school, that's when I volunteered for the draft.
Okay, so you find yourself newly married in Vietnam. What was Vietnam like?
It was horrible. My wife and I got married between basic and infantry training. And then after 9 weeks of infantry, I went to Vietnam for a year. And I went in there. I'd been 19 years old for 6 weeks when I went in combat the first time. And the one time I tripped a booby trap hand grenade 2 feet from my right leg. It never exploded. Another time, a mortar round landed right in front of me, bounced around, did not explode. Another time, in a major battle, my helmet was tore off my head with shrapnel from our own jet airplanes. We were being overran so bad we had to call jet strikes right in on ourselves. And I stood up. I was a squad leader by then with 14 men. And I stood up to tell one man to get down. It tore my helmet off. Been 1 inch lower, it took my head off. Another time, before I was a sergeant, we walked into an enemy base camp on a cloverleaf patrol. And that's a patrol where your main unit stops and three men go to the left, three men to the right, three men straight, and make a little circle. That's why they call it a cloverleaf. We found an old enemy base camp, which was common in the jungle. And we walked in. We thought, well, just an abandoned one. I told two of the men, I said, you go up the trail. I'll go to the right. We'll meet back in a few minutes. Well, I began to walk by myself through that camp to the right. And suddenly there was fresh dirt on the bunkers. I realized this is a newer base camp. And then the trail made a 90-degree turn to the left. I began to walk up. I seen a big kitchen bunker where they cook. And there were seven chickens walking in front. It'd be years later I realized that every man in that bunker had a chicken because there's no refrigeration in the jungle, obviously. And I kept walking up. I didn't have sense enough to turn back. And I got 15 feet away. And five of the seven men that was in it stood up on me. The one at the door actually had a smile on his face. I guess the horrified look.
I mean, you were that close that you could see his face.
Oh, I was 15 feet away. I could see every one of them. But the one at the door, I think he smiled because of the look on my face, probably. And I dove behind a termite hill. That termites make in the jungle. It's almost like concrete. And I just walked by. I dove behind it. Began to fire my M16. It jammed. I broke my cleaning rod off. Kept on jamming. I began to throw hand grenades. And then finally the other two men got close enough to throw their hand grenades to me. And I'd pop the pins and throw them. And I'd unjam my weapon and fire until it jammed again. But to make a long story short, God allowed me to live. I didn't realize it, God. I thought I was just lucky then. And we captured two of the men that went out of that bunker into another tunnel. They were wounded. And then the other five did not make it.
But you shouldn't have lived on any of the things you were we've been talking this whole show of how you should have died.
I should have.
You became quite an alcoholic in Nam. Why?
I was full of hate. I was full of bitterness. War is a very horrible thing. And, you know, the elements are horrible, the leeches in the jungle, the big red ants, the chopping through the jungle and then fighting with the enemy. But yet, what I would do every time I went in base camp, I would just begin to just drink, and I realized I was just drowning demons is what I was trying to do.
Just out of curiosity, did you get a certain high when you were in combat and it was you didn't know whether you'd be killed or not? I mean, was there a certain adrenaline rush that you had?
Oh, certainly. Certainly there was. And even like on my website, I have pictures of coming out of a tunnel with a booby trap in my hand. I didn't know the picture was taken. The Stars and Stripes military photographer was there and took it. But I used to go out of my way to take chances. And I did get a rush. I got, you know, the adrenaline. And between the hate and the adrenaline seemed to suffice while I was in the jungles. When I get back in base camp and begin to face my own self, I begin to drink and drink.
I would imagine that a lot of people, not just of Vietnam, but have been in any of the wars, has run into what you're describing. Were you equipped for just normal life when you were released from the military after literally we could call you a killing machine there at
right.
Vietnam?
I was not equipped at all because, you know, you come out of place like that, and within days you're back on the streets. And then I had a little time left in the Army to finish. But after I got out, I continued drinking. I ran really wild. My best friend was a bandito in a motorcycle gang in Texas, and I didn't join them, but yet I rode with them a lot. I had a chopped Harley Davidson and rode with them.
You went to church, I understand, with a bunch of cold beer in your pickup truck.
Yes, years later, right before I got saved, and I'd calmed down a little bit and went into law enforcement in Beaumont, Texas, which I was fighting all the time, legally. And then twice I nearly got killed in the line of duty, very, very close to being shot. But then God began to deal with me, and we went up deer hunting up further up in Texas where my brother-in-law and sister-in-law live. And I'd have beer iced down in the hunting lease. And there was a revival going on, and God was dealing with me. And every night they had service. So
we're out of time. Pick up right here on tomorrow's broadcast. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpucha or Chalitzim, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 315-21, or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape or CD of this week's broadcast, send a donation of $10 or more to Sid Roth, that's SIDROTH, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, or archives of our radio and TV shows, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.